Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week's guest says John Brennan is Barack Obama's Dick Cheney, operating outside the law, lying about bin Laden, and lying about drones. The White House has killed an American for his use of the First Amendment. The CIA has stopped lying to Congress only to start telling Congress nothing. Senator Dianne Feinstein is complicit in these crimes. And the overly aggressive prosecution of Aaron Swartz was all too typical, but the evidence suggests a connection to the Department of Justice's ongoing pursuit of WikiLeaks. I have the great privilege of welcoming to Talk Nation Radio this week Marcy Wheeler, also known as Empty Wheel, who blogs at emptywheel.net. She has been blogging full-time since 2007. She is known, I'm told, for her blogging on the Scooter Libby trial, as well as for her well-known discovery of how many times Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was waterboarded. But she is known to those who try to follow her blog for many, many such discoveries through her close readings and analysis of government documents that produce a truly unique and valuable website. Marcy Wheeler, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
And thanks for having me.
So one of the topics, I guess I'd like to talk, if we can, for half the show about a young man recently passed away who I knew slightly and admired, named Aaron Swartz, but maybe for the first half of the show about someone who may be remembered less fondly by supporters of civil liberties, the nominee for director of the CIA, John Brennan. What is the legal status at this point of Mr. Brennan's assassination program?
The legal status of the program, according to reports, is that on his way out of the National Security Council, so out of the White House, he is rolling out new drone rules, which don't apply at least to the CIA drone program in Pakistan, which he will take over when he is confirmed at CIA. So he's basically rolling out a rule set for DOD and exempting his own little drone world as he moves on to CIA, so he continues to be unbound by any rules.
Now, isn't it the legislative branch under our constitutional system that is supposed to make rules?
Absolutely, but we know for a fact that the administration is not providing anywhere near the information they are supposed to give to Congress on covert programs like drones. One of the Senate intelligence members, Ron Wyden, has been asking for 2 years for answers to pretty basic questions about the drone program, and they're still stonewalling him. So if he doesn't know, then the people who are legally obligated to be told don't know.
So the idea is that the executive branch will make up its own laws outside of the legislative branch for how to conduct an operation of what I see as murder. Tell me if I'm wrong, if there's a distinction here that it's assassination or some other type of killing, and then exclude from its made-up laws one of the primary agencies engaged in the activity?
Right. I mean, DOD and CIA generally are subject to different kinds of oversight. DOD doesn't have to tell people ahead of time what they're doing, but they are supposed to have less protection as covert actions, whereas CIA, we have for decades given them carte blanche to break the law under the big label of covert actions, with the caveat that Congress is supposed to know about it ahead of time. And it's the last part, Congress knowing about it ahead of time, which the administration, and frankly, you know, a couple administrations in a row, have refused to abide by. So, you know, everyone says, well, we need to, I'm not agreeing with this, but I think, you know, kind of national security, hard-nosed people will say, well, we need to let the CIA do what it needs to do. But we have a law which says CIA is obligated to tell this group of say, 30 members of Congress what they're doing, and they won't even do that.
And this may be speculation, but why do you think the CIA would be moving away from telling Congress members who in many cases I think would be likely to rubber stamp virtually anything done in the name of fighting terror? Why is the CIA moving in this direction?
I think there are a bunch of reasons. I did a post where I note that they started stonewalling Wyden, at least, so Ron Wyden from Oregon, at about the same time that the committees passed the law that says you have to share the information with everybody. But that was all premised on catching the CIA in a bunch of lies. So in other words, Congress caught CIA lying to them. They said, oh, you really have to tell us everything now. And the Obama administration's response to that was to say, well, fine, we just won't tell you anything, even though we've just reaffirmed the law and we signed it saying we have to tell you everything. So part of it is I think CIA believes they either will lie to Congress or will not tell them, and they're currently operating under the will not tell them. But I also think a lot of the public claims, I mean, even on the drone program, for example, you always hear these explanations about why Anwar al-Awlaki was killed. He's a dual citizen American Yemeni who was killed in 2011. But we first started targeting him in 2009. And even according to the Intelligence Committee's own records, publicly released records, we did not believe al-Awlaki to be operational the first time we tried to kill him. So every single explanation that an administration figure has given for why it's okay to target al-Awlaki, well, it might be true in September 2011, although I have my doubts about that as well. It was clearly not true, even according to the intelligence community's own claims about what they knew about al-Awlaki the first time they tried to kill him. And so we know it was illegal from the start. We know the first not the first, there were a couple of Americans killed before this, but one of the first big times they tried to take out an American citizen with a drone, he was still, as far as they knew, a propaganda.
So they were targeting an American citizen for execution, assassination, murder, whatever you want to call it, for things he was saying. When you talk about Congress catching the CIA at lying, I assume you're referring to lies told about its torturing of detainees. Is that right? And how did Congress catch them?
Yeah, not just torturing. I mean, lying about torturing, lying about the torture tapes, lying about this one was important only because it got a Republican involved, Pete Hoekstra. There were a bunch of missionaries who were shot down in South America, and CIA lied about that. CIA lied about renditions. There's one more I'm missing. But there was a series of lies that in 2009, 2010, they actually kind of formalized them into a report. And I think they were going to release it publicly unless the administration agreed until the administration basically agreed to follow the letter of the law that they are not now following. But what's interesting, again, Ron Wyden, in his preparation for John Brennan's confirmation hearings, which will be February 7th, sent a letter, and he said the Senate Intelligence Committee just finished the 6,000-page document on torture, and one of the things he said is in there is not only does it show that CIA was lying to Congress, we knew that, not only does it show that CIA was lying to DOJ, I think DOJ kind of let itself be lied to, but we did know that, and we know that CIA kind of repeatedly presented what happened when they killed detainees according to their own version, so as to cover up the fact that they had murdered these people. But we sort of knew that. But the report also apparently concludes that CIA was lying to the White House. So that might be convenient detail to protect people like Dick Cheney and David Addington, who were really the inventors of this entire program. But regardless, that report says that CIA was lying to the White House as well as lying to Congress and to the Justice Department and to all of us. So It may mean the lies are even more extensive than we knew about.
Is there a major difference to be made one way or another in putting John Brennan in charge of the CIA? I mean, people are outraged by his nomination, but he seems to fit in perfectly with this is someone who's supported torture, who's supported drone killings. He seems to be the right guy to run that agency. Is he going to make it worse? Is there someone else who would make it better? Or are there other structural reforms or the elimination of that agency that are needed?
I think he's been operating as a kind of Dick Cheney for the past 4 years anyway. We learned with Iran-Contra that you can get away with far more if you run covert programs from the White House than if you do from CIA, right? Because the White House isn't even nominally subject to the kind of oversight that CIA is supposed to be. And I think Brennan was acting just like Cheney. He was running the national security programs out of the White House. There was no question of oversight because he wouldn't ever come under oversight. And he had his hands on both the CIA and the DOD side of things. Moving him to CIA, at least nominally, puts him under congressional oversight. He won't, I have no reason to believe that he'll give them any more time of day than he did in the White House. It also, at least nominally, cuts down on his brief, on his portfolio. In other words, he no longer has his fingers on both the DOD and CIA side. So it might well be an okay thing. One of the things I'm most concerned about is you're basically moving a George Tenet guy back to the CIA after having seen very recently what happens when you have a guy who's willing to politicize intelligence for you, right? One thing we know, it is completely documented about John Brennan, is that he lies about the drone programs shamelessly. Obviously shamelessly. Everybody knows it.
No victims. He says there were no victims, no civilian deaths. That was his claim, knowing full well otherwise.
It's not just that lie, but he also, in his drone speech, he also got up and said, we target this very carefully, when in fact there's the signature strikes, which mean we target people based on patterns, not on their known identity. So he does, but he lies repeatedly about this. His more kind of spectacular lies are associated with the Osama bin Laden raid, where immediately thereafter he turned it into this very dramatic Hollywood plot. He was caught. He later served as source for a New Yorker article for the Zero Dark 30. So, he keeps telling these stories about Osama bin Laden's raid, which are very exciting and make Americans love targeted killing and assassination, but they're not true. And so we have a person who likes to lie about intelligence, and we are about to put him in charge of CIA again.
What could... Short of refusing his nomination and engaging in serious oversight, what could of the CIA? What could Congress do? If Senator Wyden has been requesting basic information on the drone program for years and being stonewalled, is there not the possibility of a subpoena? Is there not the possibility? In the House, where Congressman Keith Ellison has at least begun acting as if he cares, of the initiation of impeachment proceedings? Is Congress out of tools, or could they be doing something?
I think they're out of tools that they will or can use. And I think Wyden's never going to get a subpoena, because to get a subpoena, he has to get Dianne Feinstein to agree to it, who's the chair of the committee. And Feinstein, as one of the four people who has been briefed on the drone program, is therefore implicated in it. She has repeatedly said that she's perfectly happy with what she knows about the drone program. And so for her to subpoena it would be for her to willingly undergo oversight about her own complicity in the drone program. You can't even, what's remarkable is even in the Senate Judiciary Committee, with somebody who's ostensibly quite liberal in Pat Leahy, there have been people on both sides of the aisles in Senate Judiciary demanding the memos used to authorize the targeted killing, and Leahy has repeatedly settled that, whether it was Chuck Grassley's effort, John Cornyn's effort from the Republican side, for somebody like Wyden for his own. I mean, Leahy hadn't had a request in for these memos for years, and he's also, I mean, I counted once. There have been something like 10 efforts on the part of Congress to get the bases for this targeted killing program, and the White House has blown off every single one of them.
We're speaking with Marcy Wheeler, also known as Empty Wheel. You need to check out her blog at emptywheel.net. I want to change the conversation, if we can, to the subject of Aaron Swartz, who has been in the news lately. Many listeners may have heard the name, but if you could explain briefly who he was and the significance of his story.
It's hard to speak of him except in superlative terms, because he was both from a technical standpoint, being an early innovator on things like Reddit and Creative Commons, and from a social justice standpoint, he really was a pioneer and incredibly young, 26 when he took his life. But he also, because he was part of the open access movement, so a group of people who were trying to make more information available to people, he had been hounded by DOJ because of efforts that he made to take basically largely public domain materials and put them make them more accessible to people. So in this case, he had been arrested in January of 2011, and he was being prosecuted for having downloaded a bunch of there's a database called JSTOR, which makes accessible all of the scholarly journals. He had access to that legally, and he had access to MIT legally as a guest. He was downloading all of them at MIT. It's unclear precisely what use he was going to put them to, though no one has ever claimed he wanted to get rich or make any money off of it. And DOJ, under some very curious circumstances, kind of put together a prosecution of him, kept throwing the book at him, saying, well, we're going to go for the most stringent punishment. We're going to paint what you did as hacking, as stealing, as breaking the law, when there's no hint that he had any of these ill wills, ill intent for what he was doing. And after he killed himself on the 11th, on January 11th, his family members and a number of his associates said, well, you know, one of the factors that contributed to him taking his own life was the way DOJ was prosecuting him for stuff that was not the kind of crime that they made it out to be.
There seems to be a growing consensus that the prosecutor and perhaps the Justice Department went after him in an extraordinary way, that it wasn't typical law enforcement. Is that your view, and what factors do you think might have contributed to that?
I mean, DOJ has a tremendous amount of power. They go after any of a range of people, including people who use computers to kind of upend the power structures of our country. They go after any number of them really aggressively. So to some degree, it's not abnormal. What happened to him is what DOJ does all the time. And what the tactics used are the kinds of things DOJ does all the time. And Obama's DOJ is just as bad, if not worse, than Bush's. The head of his criminal division has quite literally rewarded all of the people who've been abusive in terms of prosecutorial discretion. So at that level, it's not at all abnormal. But I do think there's great reason to believe that DOJ was sort of on a personal vendetta against Aaron. And there are a number of questions about his prosecution and the circumstances around his prosecution that really make it seem like retaliation more than the interests of society.
Retaliation for what?
Well, a range of things. One is before he downloaded all of JSTOR, he downloaded 20% of what's called PACER, which is DOJ's own database, making information accessible. And they don't like that because it makes it clear what they're doing with prosecution. The other thing is when he was, he was arrested in January, and then actually the Secret Service was conducting the investigation, sort of let it drop for 6 weeks. And then only in February of 2011 did they start getting warrants and investigating some of the stuff that he was involved in. And that's interesting because through that entire period, Aaron was also FOIAing a bunch of information, in part about the government's treatment of Bradley Manning. And you can track those dates very closely when Forks went to Army Criminal Investigative Service and said, you know, I want this tape, I know you have, where Bradley Manning, in his own words, describes what kind of treatment he was under in December of 2010. And the next day is when they finally start getting warrants to investigate his house and his computer and so on and so forth. So it's just this, the timeline is really troubling because it really suggests that at a time when DOJ was kind of frantically trying to find some way, any way to prosecute WikiLeaks, they decided to go after Aaron for something that had nothing to do with WikiLeaks. But while they had a grand jury investigating him, it's fairly clear they were doing some fishing expeditions into some of the other stuff that he had done with his life. So it's unclear, you know, I think they tried to implicate Aaron even further than they did, failed to, and because they couldn't implicate him, because he was innocent, everything else he was doing was completely legal, they kind of retaliated even further with the one charge that they sort of kind of had evidence for.
So he was sending Freedom of Information Act requests for information on the brutal treatment of Bradley Manning, a U.S. prisoner accused of leaking information to WikiLeaks. So there's possible retaliation there. But am I right that WikiLeaks tweeted some days ago that they believed that Aaron might have been a source?
They said, I'm very sympathetic with a lot of people who think that these tweets were self-serving on the part of WikiLeaks.
For sure.
But taking them at their face value, they said, one, that Aaron had helped WikiLeaks, aside from being a source or not. Two, that he had conversations with Julian Assange. And three, that they suspected but could not prove that he had been a source. So if those things are true, then it suggests, A, that Aaron had worked with WikiLeaks in a completely legal fashion, and instead of being able to prosecute him for WikiLeaks, the government kind of retaliated with this JSTOR stuff. Interestingly, again, I talked about the timeline of this all. When they finally got a warrant to start investigating Aaron's house and computer, the Wall Street Journal had just reported that DOJ had hit a wall in its theory of how they were going to prosecute Julian Assange. So in other words, they had said, well, we think we can prove that Bradley Manning was enticed to share these cables by Julian Assange, and therefore Julian Assange was complicit. By February 9th, they said, actually, we don't have any proof of that. Bradley Manning did it all on his own. That's what the report said. And that's the day, again, there was this remarkable moment in February of 2011. That is the day when, after having sat on these investigative materials for a month, Secret Service first started getting warrants to investigate Forks. And then, and most interestingly, they didn't, you know, ostensibly they were investigating him for a crime that was tied to a laptop they had in their possession. They went and they got warrants for the laptop, but they also got warrants for his house and then his office, and they let the warrants for the laptop lapse. Which tells you that, you know, again, their priorities were not to investigate Forks for downloading JSTOR. Their priorities were to go and conduct fishing and fishing expeditions into Forks' life, into his home, into his office, into his other computers, into his, we know that they subpoenaed or they gave an order for information of some sort to Amazon. There's no allegation at all that Amazon was involved in the JSTOR. They were just trying to collect any information, and if in fact he did have a tie to WikiLeaks, it seems very likely that they were fishing for WikiLeaks information in the guise of carrying out this investigation into JSTOR.
We have a couple minutes left. There are groups pushing for various reforms, including bills named for Aaron. Is there a moral to this story, or is there a pair of them in that it seems you're suggesting there's a routine practice here? There are copyright laws. There are decades in prison for victimless crimes, but there may be particular prosecutorial abuse in this case as well.
Right. In this, one of the reasons his prosecution is so egregious is because they're basically prosecuting for a term of use violation. They're saying, when you went into MIT system, it says, you know, you can't do X, Y, or Z. And people have shown that nobody ever reads these terms of use. And yet what the government is trying to do is make any violation of these terms of use theft. The Ninth Circuit recently had a decision which said that was ridiculous. There's a circuit split, so it's probably going to go to the Supreme Court, and some people think that the Ninth Circuit decision will be upheld. But meanwhile, there's this notion that anytime you or I or anybody else who's a dissident who doesn't abide by these terms of use that nobody reads and are written in such legalese, I mean, Aaron was a smart guy. I'm sure if he had read them, he would have understood them. But most of us aren't that smart, and most of us, when we read these terms of service agreements, you know, we couldn't make heads or tails of them. And yet the government wants to be able to use those as a means to criminalize behaviors that don't harm society, that have no, you know, that are not a threat to society. It's just a means of really criminalizing dissent.
These are the screens of small print that you must scroll through to click I agree or I accept before you move on to another page on a website, correct?
Correct, yeah. They're everywhere, right? And anytime you violate one, anytime you do anything that the government doesn't like in using a computer, they could then slap this criminal designation on you and go after and prosecute you. And that's really what they were doing with Aaron. And so that's one of the main gist of the legal changes they're trying to do. There's a couple other that need to happen. You know, that these laws were written in the 80s before all of us lived on our computers and before data became as omnipresent as it currently is. So they really do need to be updated. So that could be one good part of it. But, you know, ultimately, the prosecutorial tactics are still there. Prosecutorial overreach on the part of the Obama DOJ is still there. Eric Holder will still be around. Lanny Brewer, who's the head of criminal division, will still be around. Not the U.S. attorney who prosecuted Swartz, but the assistant U.S. attorney is protected by civil service protection, so he presumably will always still be around. So, you know, we really have to change the way the government uses prosecution to criminalize people like Aaron Swartz and then make life easier on people like Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JPMorgan Chase, which has engaged in a great deal of criminal activity but never gets prosecuted for it.
Meanwhile, perhaps if you are called to be a member of a jury, you can choose whether to enforce such outrageous laws while they're on the books. We've been speaking with Marcy Wheeler. She blogs at emptywheel.net. You should check it out now and every day, every week, whenever you can, emptywheel.net. Marcy, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
In 2007, John Kiriakou was the first former CIA officer to publicly acknowledge that the CIA was waterboarding people. The retribution for that act of whistleblowing began immediately. Now Kiriakou is finally going to prison for 30 months for the act of telling an author the name of someone to interview, even though the name was already known, and Kiriakou's prosecution has made it better known. To ask President Obama to pardon or commute Kiriakou's sentence, go to rootsaction.org. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. All past shows can be found at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.